This is 89.9 WWNO. Yes, we're headed for another art-filled week. Are you making plans or do you need some ideas? Well, you've come to the right place. Whether you're in the mood for a contemplative evening of jazz, an off-Broadway children's musical, or conversation with an English designer, it's all in the mixed media. Come along as we go inside the arts. Hi, I'm your host, Diane Mack. The Contemporary Arts Center, in partnership with Trinity Episcopal Church, presents the world premiere of jazz trumpeter Hannibal Lacombe's Water Too High, Bones Too Low, an original composition that commemorates the 8th anniversary of Hurricane Katrina and is dedicated to the life of Ashley Qualls, the 25-year-old Tulane graduate, a social worker who was shot to death last month at the corner of Esplanade Avenue and North Roman Street. Joining me now is composer and trumpeter Hannibal Lacombe and poet George Tobias. Gentlemen, welcome to Inside the Arts.
Yay!
Water Too High, Bones Too Low. Hannibal, tell us about this moving work and how you came to compose it.
One day, John Scott and I, we were walking on the levee, and he turned me towards the city. When I'm on the levee, I'm always looking to the river. But he turned me around one day, and then he said, look. And I realized, wow, the people are 8 feet below the level of the water. That stayed in my mind. And after the storm, when he was in Houston in the hospital, as I was leaving the room, last time I saw him, in fact, he grabbed my hand and said, hey, man, you got to promise me you're going to write a piece on Katrina. I said, man, don't do that to me. He said, no, you got to promise me. I said, okay. I said, okay, because I never like refusing, saying no to John. He has such a giant heart, a giving heart. And so little by little, words started coming to me. The text started coming to me. And I realized once I came here, that my text wasn't what it should be. And so I called on my great friend, one of the greatest friends I have, my trash can. One of the greatest editors in the world is the trash can. So I threw all but one section of the work in the trash can. And that happened after I had a conversation with a sister who was kind enough to loan me and my daughter an iron in the hotel. And I asked her, her feelings about Katrina, her experiences with it. And what she told me redirected the entire piece, the timbre, the feeling, the concept of the whole piece. It went from one of condemnation, and of course, I give the Neros who sipped tea while our people were suffering, I give them their due. But the piece ends with give thanks. Because from the conversation with this sister, I realized that the people who really need to be seen are the ones who broke bread with those who didn't have it, who shared their resources with those who didn't have it. So the last veil of the piece, I write in veils, not in movements or stages. So the last veil of the piece is called Give Thanks.
So this is the fulfillment of a promise to the late sculptor John Scott.
Hallelujah. And if he doesn't like it, it ain't my problem.
What was the challenge in delivering on your word?
Having to relive that. Having to relive the immense suffering of so many salt-of-the-earth people. Having to go to the woods and ask God, why is it that our people have to suffer so much in this land? And when will it end?
Tell us more about the issues that you explore and how you think your work as an artist will affect change in our city.
I was at Ms. Willie Mae's before the storm occurred.
This is the restaurant?
The restaurant. I was sitting there and had the great pleasure of being served by Miss Willie Mae, no less. And I overheard the conversation of two elders, and one began to weep quietly. And he said to the other gentleman, he said, "I never thought I would live to see the day that I would regret seeing one of our babies born." And that stuck with me all those years. And in Veil 3, Song of Peace, I used that. It says, "Let there be peace in the valley of the land called New Orleans. Let it bloom in the souls of the children who strike out with pain just to be seen." We are not unaffected by everything that's happening around us at every moment. It influences our lives, and it certainly influenced that music.
So through music, you're addressing the after effects of Hurricane Katrina and the violence that plagues our city.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You know, John Scott said that you would never be able to really leave New Orleans following your residency at the Contemporary Arts Center. You went back to Texas, but you keep coming back. Was he right?
He makes me sick. He's like my wife. He's always right. And that's something about that felt good, and I understood the deeper meaning of what he was saying. Because for me, New Orleans is the epicenter of culture, to my mind, of the blending of Africa and of America.
Now, Hannibal, in addition to your work as a renowned musician, you have embarked upon a prison ministry initiative you call the Music Liberation Orchestra. Tell us about the program and its connection to your upcoming concert.
There are four principles to be a member of the Music Liberation Orchestra, and you don't have to be a musician, but you have to first renounce violence, to keep a journal for yourself and your children, 3, acknowledge the presence of the divine, and last, fall in love with forgiveness. Those are the four principles by which you have to accept to become a member of the Music Liberation Orchestra. And through the great vision of the Orleans Parish Sheriff, Sheriff Guzman, the reentry program was started, which is headed by Mr. Leo Hayden. And through Brother Hayden, I was able to come into the prison system here with my Music Liberation program.
And you've brought with you someone who has benefited from your ministry, George Tobias. You are a poet.
Yay.
You have been helped by Hannibal's prison ministry. Tell us your story and your role with this latest work.
Well, my story, I was incarcerated for armed robbery in the year 2000, and I served 12 years, 10 months. At the end of that incarceration, I want to say maybe 90 days before I was released, I was fortunate enough to meet the most amazing spirit, you know, I've ever met in Brother Hannibal through the reentry program that we have here in New Orleans. So, I mean, and we perform what we like to call we made a circle every day. And we would gather and he would play his trumpet. And we would gather, you know, it'd be maybe 11 or 12 of us guys, whoever would come visit. And we would, and we in this circle, and that's what I wrote the piece about, you know, you found who you were. It was very powerful. And, you know, I was able to share with him some of the things, my works, and he shared with us his. And it was that back and forth, you know, that allowed that fire to continue to burn every day that we met with each other. So it was a good experience.
You've been keeping a journal ever since.
Yes.
And you're going to use that healing power in the concert that's coming up?
Yes, I have the opportunity to do a spoken word.
Can you share something from it?
I can. And Okay. There's a place where healing lies, restoration for the mind, body, and soul. And in this place, you will find your way back to you. In Eye of the Storm, I'm told it's peaceful, while everything around it is in total chaos. Today, we are caught up in this storm we call life. Destruction seems to be the one consistent thing in the lives of our children. How do we ease the pain and break through the mind of a kid who's faced with grown-up problems every day?
I was moved to commission my brother to write this poem. And I was hoping that it will be his first commission.
It is.
I expect his work to flourish.
What is it that you hope, Hannibal, will stick with audiences long after this concert is over?
In the end, all we have is how we treat one another. That's what the music is, and that's what I ultimately hope to remind the people of.
Jazz trumpeter and composer Hannibal Lacombe and poet George Tobias.
Yeah.
Gentlemen, thank you.
Thank you.
The Contemporary Arts Center presents the world premiere of Hannibal Lacombe's Water Too High, Bones Too Low, a commentary on Hurricane Katrina dedicated to the life of Ashley Qualls at Trinity Episcopal Church, 1329 Jackson Avenue, Saturday at 7 p.m. Admission is free. You're listening to Inside the Arts on 89.9 WWNO, New Orleans Public Radio. I'm Diane Mack. English designer Camilla Franklin knows how to spin a yarn, quite literally, in fact. WWNO's Sharon Litwin, who produces Notes from New Orleans, spoke with her about her involvement in Louisiana's long-standing textile industry.
It's very fashionable these days to talk about the creative economy, those entrepreneurial cultural entities that actually make money or are complementary to those that already do. Think jewel case design for CDs, new web page creations, movie set design and costume manufacturing. It's all stuff New Orleanians can do and are doing. Now there's a new one using the latest in cutting-edge digital technology. It's the brainchild of a local textile designer who can produce any kind of design on any kind of fabric anyone might want.
Basically, think about a desktop printer that's turned into a mammoth printer and at high speed and very reliable. I can print rolls of fabric up to 60 inches wide, but there are many types of digital printers out there. And also in production, my printer's relatively slow, but there are printers out there that can print 70 yards a minute. So they're very viable when it comes to production. And those tend to be in the European textile market in Italy and Turkey. And then there's a new one that's just been set up in Brazil.
That's Camilla Franklin. After graduating art school in England, she spent 5 years working for Burlington Industries in New York before coming to New Orleans in 1996 to join Blumenthal Printworks, staying there until its recent closure.
New Orleans historically was rivaled New York as far as all the businesses that were in New York were in New Orleans, including textiles, fashion, and bringing in the fabrics from Europe. There were several companies until very recently that functioned very well. But unfortunately, with the advent of China and no quotas, all the manufacturing's gone offshore very quickly. So it's nice to have that opportunity for the town coming back.
Now Camilla has customers all over the United States looking to her to produce specific fabric designs on their choice of silk or cotton or linen using environmentally friendly inks that can be washed or dry cleaned.
One of the benefits of having digital printing on the state side is the customization and that you don't have to have a minimum of 3,000 yards. You don't have to have thousands of yards on containers on the water. You can print a minimum of 1 or 2 yards with a custom design and a custom colour match without any problem. One of the technologies I'm using is a spectrophotometer. So if you give me any kind of paint reference, I can measure it in using this little spectro and completely reproduce the colour on the fabric.
Camilla could have started her business anywhere, but like so many in our creative economy, New Orleans is where she wanted to stay.
Well, originally I was born in Oxford, England, on a farm out in the Cotswolds, very idyllic. Never thought about being in the textile industry, but always was surrounded by textiles. I always sewed, knitted, everything I could think of to do with fabrics, never thinking it was a real job. And ended up in art school, and my tutor said, your colour sense is amazing, you've got to go out and find somewhere to do textile design. So that took me up to the north of England and Scotland. And then eventually I got hired by Burlington Industries in New York, and that's what brought me to America initially. Being a country girl, couldn't handle the New York hot and heavy all the time. Love to visit, but would be a crazy old lady if I'd stayed there. And then one of the reasons that I wanted to do this digital printing was that it enabled me to stay in New Orleans, because I just fell in love with the place and took my oath of allegiance in American and don't plan on going anywhere anytime soon.
To read more about Camilla Franklin and her new textile business, go to wwno.org or nolavie.com. For WWNO, I'm Sharon Litwin.
Well, I see you got your brand new leopard skin pillbox.
Sharon Litwin's Notes from New Orleans is brought to you in partnership with NOLA-V and is made possible with the assistance of the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation.
You know, you must tell me, baby, how you're...
The New Orleans premiere production of the off-Broadway musical Children's Letters to God continues its run at the Nordtai Tracy Theater at Gallier Hall. It is the second summer production by Crescent City Lights Youth Theater in conjunction with NordSea. Joining me today is Crescent City Lights Executive Director Julie Condi and Donald Jones, an alum who is now directing this production. Welcome.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Julie, congratulations on another production this summer with an all-kids cast. Tell me, how did you come to choose this work, which I believe is based on the international best-selling book by Stuart Hample and Derek Marshall?
Well, it was done off-Broadway in 2004, and I happened to hear excerpts from it and thought, oh, the perfect show for Crescent City Lights. Then I decided to pair it with Pocket Full of Rhymes to have a real kids' summer. So you had Mother Goose Rhymes in the beginning of the summer. Then you actually had letters written by kids. And the whole show is so charming, getting into the brains of children about what do they really think about God and life.
And what are the questions that the children have for God?
God, how come you sent me a baby brother when I asked for a puppy? And, you know, lots of things about just life in general, things that even we grown-ups may sometimes wonder why. How come? What's the purpose of these things that happen to us? And the way it's presented through the show, through the lives of five friends who actually experience moving away, they experience the death of a pet, all that comes out through the questions that they ask to God and their relationships with each other and how they ultimately help each other to persevere and to make it through these tough spots in a kid's life.
And Donald Jones, this is a full circle moment for you. Tell us about your journey from child actor to director.
I started working with Crescent City Lights Youth Theater, formerly Summer Stages, the summer of my fourth grade year. And every summer leading up until I was in high school, I was a participant with Miss Julie, and we did, every now and again, I did two shows pretty much every summer. And then after that, I went on to a university, Northwestern State University in Natchitoches, Louisiana, and studied theater and dance there. And after graduating in 2009, I went and worked in a bunch of regional theaters across the country and then ended up doing the second national tour of The Color Purple. There was a lot of foundation built for me for my career through Summer Stages. So I wanted to continue that growth with the kids that she has right now.
And how is that experience with Summer Stages now, Crescent City Lights Youth Theater? How is that helping in this instance where you're directing?
Well, I understand the kids because they all grew up in New Orleans like I did. The group of kids she has now is very resembles the group that I was with, very diverse with gender and color and economic background. And that was one thing that I really loved about working with all of the kids when I was younger. It was a very diverse group. So I understand how they all get to interact and are from different schools. And they come here and they're all dedicated to working hard. And I want to just take what they have and just, you know, amplify it a little bit.
So what would you say will be your signature on this production?
I believe a little goes a long way, and I am a firm believer in keeping things simple and clean and clear. So that's kind of my vision with this whole show, is just keeping it really simple. So I just want their natural charisma and their personality to just show strong and not add too much to what is already great.
And I hear there's more for you. You're headed to Broadway?
I am. I will be making my Broadway debut in the spring of March 2014 with a Disney musical. So I'm very excited, looking forward to that.
And Julie, what are your thoughts as you watch a former student reach new heights?
I'm a proud stage mom, what can I say? But it proves to me that the training these kids get here will help them throughout their life.
What are you hoping people will remember most from this production?
The message that they will send home at the end of the show, I think, will resonate with the audience for days afterwards. Between their honesty on stage as actors and the beauty of the music, I think audience members will truly remember this show.
Julie Condy and Donald Jones with Crescent City Lights Youth Theater. Thanks so much for stopping by.
Thank you. Questions,
questions. Crescent City Lights Youth Theater presents the off-Broadway musical Children's Letters to God at the Nord Ty Tracy Theater, first floor, Gallier Hall. Final performances run August 23rd through the 25th. More info at crescentcitylights.org. That's our show for this week. Inside the Arts is a production of WWNO. Our program is archived at WWNO.org. I'll be back with more ideas for your artistic palette next Tuesday at 1 p.m. when we'll go Inside the Arts. I'm Diane Mack.